Most of you will know I've talked about my buddy Nathan a lot. Okay, my buddy Nathan, we've been best friends since first grade. I took a trip in April, and I went out and spent a week with him. And we worked at his church. He's a pastor out there. We did music. We built things, you know, fun stuff. Okay, so one of the things we did, we went kayaking. And that was fun. That was my first time really kayaking. And we went on the river the first time, and it's a mountain runoff. It's mountain runoff. So for those of you who haven't experienced that, it's never warm. Okay, it's always cold. And so I learned you can't turn the kayak sideways to the stream. I didn't fully tip over, but my pants got really, really wet. Okay, so that was fun. But this is a picture of us up on the mountain. This is about 2 hours from where he lives. And we went up and we decided we were going to go kayaking up in this mountain lake. And we were worried we were going to have to bust through the ice on the edge of the lake to get our kayaks in so that we could get out to deeper water where it wouldn't be frozen. We never made it to the lake because this happened. Yeah, so the 3 or 4 inches of snow, because the picture before, there's no snow, but as you climb in the mountains, you'll get snow. It takes less, you know how that works. So as we climbed up, we had like 3 inches of snow. And we kept driving, and all of a sudden the road went down and the snow level stayed the same, or it looked like the road stayed the same. And we got on about 3 foot of snow. So we started spinning and stopped, and the truck sunk down, and we were sitting on the frame. And we didn't have shovels. All we had was kayaks. So I don't know if you've ever shoveled with a kayak paddle, but 4 hours later, we still could not get the truck out. We were shoving sticks under tires, trying to get traction. It reminded me of getting stuck out in state lands with my dad's little Ford Escort when I was like 5 years old and grabbing sticks to throw in the mud so that it had some traction. Okay, nothing. So eventually, after 4 hours of shoveling and crawling underneath the truck, we hiked down the mountain over an hour, I'd say an hour and a half down the mountain, so that we could get cell service so we could call for help. And so an hour and a half down the mountain, and we finally got help, and they came up and they got us out. It was awesome. It was so much fun. And I tell you that because we were never really in danger. It was like we got up there at like 10 in the morning or something like that, and at like 2 in the morning, we stopped shoveling, and then at like 3:30, we were calling for help. So it was like 5:30, 6 o'clock before somebody showed up to help us. But I got to spend the whole day on the mountain worshiping and praying with my best friend, and we got yet another one of the one-time Nathan and I stories, because our whole life has been full of those stories. As if we weren't glutton enough for punishment, we decided a couple days later that we were going to go up to that same spot, except not as far up as we went where we got stuck. We were going to go up again, and we were going to go backpacking. We were going to go hiking, and we were going to take our hammocks, and we were going to sleep in the mountains. That was a whole different ball of wax. When we did that, we decided that we were going to go up there. And so we hike up into the mountains after we've parked our vehicle, and we hike up and we set up camp and we set up our hammocks and we start a fire. And I don't know if all of you, there's our campsite. That's our little, you probably can't see it, but they're a little bitty fire is closest to us. Well, what remains of it? This is the following morning. But those tarps over top of the hammocks are called rain flies. And so they're just little backpacking tarps. And you will put those over top of your hammock. So if it rains, well, we had 2 rain flies and 3 hammocks. So it wasn't supposed to rain. At least that's what we thought. So we got up in the mountains and we set up our hammocks, and after night, after we had our fire, we got ready for bed, and I was like, you know, I'd rather sleep under the tarp in case it rains So we rearranged the rain flies and we rearranged the hammocks, and let's turn it so that you can see what it kind of looks like. You can see two hammocks, but you can't really see it because it's dark. But on the top, over top of, I believe, this side, there's another hammock there. And that's the one I slept in. Well, it rained all night. Okay. It rained from dark. It started raining before dark, but we had to finish our fire and cook our food. But it rained all night. And the only reason it stopped raining is because it dropped from mid-40s to lower 20s and it started snowing. Yeah, that was fun. Okay. It was awesome, actually. I loved it. I was warm. I was cuddled up in my sleeping bag and in my hammock. And we had some other stuff. I'll tell you about that later if you're interested. But that's how we stayed warm. And it was so much fun. But I did not sleep, okay? Because we slept under those hammocks or under those rain flies, and it rained all night, like I'm saying, and it was so dark up there because it's the mountains. There's no city light. There's no residual light bouncing off the clouds. It's overcast because it's raining, and you're in the mountains. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. It was dark, and so especially under that canopy, you couldn't see anything unless you turned your flashlight on. Like I kept like bumping the guys to make sure they were still there. Okay, and so you can't see anything, and we'd get out of the hammocks in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, which was a whole different fun experience because that's like 4.5-5 foot off the ground for that top hammock. That was a fun experience, but that was the only time we got out of the hammocks was to use the bathroom, and those trees behind us were the bathroom. And so my buddy Nathan wakes me up in the middle of the night and he's like, "Cray, what's next to your face?" Okay, and I look up and there's just this mass. Right, it's like touching my hammock. And so I push on it and I hear, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." Because it had rained and there was like 10 gallons of water in the tarps. And they had like started moving. I would have gotten a bath. I would forget it. I'm going to the truck. Okay, so I pushed on them. It dumped quite a bit of water onto our bags before we realized what was happening. But moved our bags, pushed on it in the middle of the night. So I went from not sleeping because we were goofing around to not sleeping because I woke up. I set an alarm on my phone for every 15 minutes to push the water out of the tarp. And so in the middle of the night, but I didn't even make it to my alarm because it was raining so hard that it would like start coming down and I could start feeling drops. So then I'd wake up and push it. And that was a long night. And here's the thing. It stopped raining when it started snowing and it was beautiful. I love snow. I love cold. I'm one of those weird people, but I had so much fun in the mountains there and shining my little flashlight out so that we could see, and you're seeing possums and all kinds of stuff running around. It was gorgeous. And then when it stopped raining, I was excited because I was going to sleep. I was really going to sleep. Everyone else is snoring. The other two guys are just sawing logs. Okay. And I'm excited to sleep and I hear a noise that no hiker ever wants to hear. I heard wolves. And I can't mimic a wolf sound. All I can mimic is a coyote. But you hear that. Okay, and out there, the wolves are not small dogs. They're not normal-sized dogs. These things take down elk. They're huge. Their paw prints are this big. Okay, they're big dogs. I have a picture that I didn't put up of like a moderate-sized wolf that its paw print was as big as my hand, like the mass of my hand without my fingers. I took a picture of it, but I didn't put it up. I didn't want to scare you. So I was terrified. I did not sleep the rest of the night. And I hear them howling all around us, and it's echoing off the mountains. And finally, I start to go to sleep because I've heard the wolves going away from us. And I've heard them moving, and I'm like, okay, we're fine. And I start to fall asleep. And just as I'm really getting to sleep, I hear a sound. I feel like I'm telling a story to my kids. Okay, I hear a sound. And this sound is right. I mean, it felt like it was right behind us. It was probably a couple hundred yards behind us, like away from us, behind us in that picture. But the wolves had like come around and like smelt us and like come around close to us. I was terrified. Okay. I didn't sleep. It was crazy. And the only thing that comforted me was to think I'm higher than the other two and they'll die first. Okay. At least I'll wake up to them going, ah, and I'll be fine. Okay. They don't have children. I do. I need to survive. So I had a lot of fun doing that. It was a great, great experience. And those wolves terrified me. Those things are big. Those things are strong. They're fierce. Speaking of big and strong, I have a little clip I want to show you. It's just really short, but here we go. Lioness. Those dudes are big. They make me look like a pipsqueak, okay? And those three dudes are yanking on that rope, and that lioness is not even, it doesn't even look like she's working. She's like, I'm just standing still. Are you even trying, okay? That would terrify me in the middle of the night. David would wake up in the middle of the night. Scripture tells us we read this story, or we read this out of Scripture this morning. David would wake up, and there'd be lions. There'd be bears. He'd wake up to his sheep bleating, like making this noise. I've heard that lions make a coughing sound in the desert, in desert areas. Like that's their talk when they're trying to be quiet. This, and they'll make like this coughing sound. To wake up to a coughing sound in the wilderness, surrounded by nothing but your sheep. You have a stick, maybe a sword. You don't have a gun, okay? There's no distance there. That thing is there. And David would just run after this thing. It is crazy to me that David, little David, the average stature at that time of somebody was like 5'2", 5'3", and David was small for the stature of the... David's like 5 foot, under 5 foot kind of idea. He's not weak, but he's small. And David's running after the... He wakes up in the night and runs after this lion. He runs after this thing that would terrify me. Okay? You think that's terrifying? I'm going to show you something even worse. Imagine this coming at you in the middle of the night. Okay? That's Lucas at Potter Park Zoo behind one of the lion things. Hey, Mike, can we flip some of the lights back on? We're done with the projector. But I had to throw that one in there. We took him to Potter Park Zoo, and every single one of those cardboard or those plastic cutout things, he had to run to it, and we had to take a picture. But David runs at these lions. And here we are, we're in 1 Samuel 16, and David, he's been spending all this time. He spent all this time in the wilderness. He spent all this time preparing and taking care of his sheep. He spent all this time, and I can focus on this a lot, but David was a very skilled musician. We see later that even Saul asked David, like David's reputation was renowned. Okay, he is asked by Saul to even come play for Saul to help calm his spirits. He's known as such a wonderful and an amazing musician. And I have to think that David's in the wilderness practicing his instruments, spending time on the mountainsides and in the valleys and in the desert with his sheep and just at night sitting around the campfire praising God. That clicks with me. That connects with me. David is prepared for things not because of his own physical strength and his own physical prowess, but because he spent so much time with God that he knows God's going to take care of him. There's a whole different message in here about how shepherds, when they wake up in the night like that, they just have to trust. You have hundreds of sheep. Let's say you have 100 sheep and you just have to trust in the night. You would kind of barricade yourself in alcoves and try and cover up with thorn bushes and things so that predators couldn't get in. But you just had to trust in the night. You would just fall asleep and trust. And so David has spent years of his life learning to trust in God. But not only learning to trust in God, but just acting boldly and courageously in the midst and in the view of outstanding crazy obstacles. David sees lions and bears and he just runs at them. And so it's no wonder when we see in 1 Samuel 16, David walks into camp. He's sent there to kind of like send his brother some food. Dad's sending a care package to the brothers who are in the army, okay? And he wants his boys to be encouraged, and he sends David to his boys. And David walks in and hears Goliath. And David, oh, he's fiery. He can't help himself. You're letting this uncircumcised Philistine talk about our God that way? This is the God that took care of me when I killed those lions in the middle of the night, when I killed those bears in the middle of the night. You think this dude is scarier than a lion in the middle of the night? Bring it on. And David, he walks in and he goes to Saul and he's like, no one else will do this. Are you kidding me? No one else will stand up when somebody else is talking about my God that way, our God that way. Nobody will stand up. Fine. I'm smaller than all of you. I'll do it. And Saul's like, I have to question Saul's motives here, but I have to also assume Saul was so full of fear. Saul is known as a man of stature himself, okay? That's why Saul is chosen as king. Like, that's one of the signs that God uses to choose Saul as king is his stature. But he pales in comparison to Goliath. And so Saul pulls David in and he's like, okay, fine. Nobody will fight it. Nobody will fight the battle. Fine, here's my sword. Here's my armor. Here's my helmet. Here's my shield. Use it all. Use the best I have to give you. And David's like, this is yours. This is not mine. I can run into the wilderness and take on a lion and a bear with nothing but a stick. Because my God's with me. I don't need your stuff, Saul. And so David walks out, and depending on your translation here, you have Goliath at either 6'9" or 9'9". I could get into this, but there's differences in the Hebrew, Greek, Hebrew Aramaic text and the Greek text, okay, depending on measurements here, but it's either 6'9" or 9'9". Okay, so Goliath is huge. And David walks out, and Goliath, we didn't read this, but Goliath's like, am I a dog? Are you sending a kid at me with a stick? You're sending a kid at me with a stick and a slingshot. Am I a dog to fetch a stick? Like, what are you doing here? And as a side note here, this isn't the first time that somebody's marched against crazy odds with just a stick. God takes his people out of Egypt, and Pharaoh's army is after him, and they're at the Red Sea, and God says, take your staff. And I can't remember if it's touch it in the water or just raise it up. Just raise your staff up. And the Red Sea. Yeah. This isn't the first time that God's people have marched into unobtainable, crazy odds against them. And they walked in with a stick. And here David runs at Goliath. And he's like, Goliath, bring it on. I got a stick. I got stones and a piece of leather. You have a sword, a shield, a helmet, a spear, a scimitar, which is like a the curved sword. Okay, you have everything, but you pale in comparison to my God. You think I'm afraid of you? I take down lions. I take down bears because my God is with me. I've spent so much time with him. I've spent so much time in the wilderness preparing myself to rely upon him. You think you pale and you think you even stand a chance compared to my God? You pale in comparisons. And he runs at him, and Goliath comes at him, and he just chucks this stone. And Goliath gets knocked down, and David runs up and he grabs Goliath's huge sword. This sword, if he's 9'9", the sword is probably close to as tall as I am. This is a huge sword. Okay? And David takes this sword and finishes Goliath off with this sword. And everyone rejoices. And this is a huge highlight in David's life. But then just a few short chapters later, we see in 1 Samuel 19, it's like David has changed. He went from this boy who's like, you pale in comparison to my God. I take on lions, I take on bears, you ain't got nothing on me. We see him when Saul is after him. And he goes to this prophet in 1 Samuel 19. And he's like, I'm on a mission from Saul. Okay, I'm running. He's really running, but he's lying to this guy saying like, oh, Saul's sending me on a mission. And I didn't even have time to grab my sword and armor. Can you help me out, please? And this prophet has Goliath's sword. I assume this is a gift to him from the king. And he takes this sword and he gives it to David. And David takes up Goliath's sword again. And he doesn't take up Goliath's sword because he's like, God, you are big enough, you are strong enough, you are powerful enough. These obstacles pale in comparison to you, and you've already used this sword, and it's a reminder of how much you can do. No, he doesn't take it up because of that. He takes it up because he's afraid. He takes up Goliath's sword because I think David is saying, I need to rely on my strength. I need to have it there to protect me. This is different than the boy who in the wilderness wakes up to the coughing of the lion and runs at it. Runs at it with a stick. And then even later, we see in David's life, he's to the point where he's covering up his sin and he's murdering people to cover up his sin. The reason that David lost the kingship was not because of the incidents with Bathsheba. Okay? It wasn't. The reason that David was no longer king was because David took up a census. And God told his people, don't amass wives, don't amass armies, don't amass gold and wealth. Okay? That's what he told the kings. Don't do this. Don't take up a census because that's relying upon your strength. How many numbers do we have to fight the battle? Rather than going into a battle and saying, and God saying, you only need 300. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. You only need 300. You have thousands. Take 300. I'll take care of the rest. I'm fighting the battles for you. And you see David relying upon his own strength. How much strength do I have? What are my fighting numbers? Can I take care of it? I think that this military might became some kind of idol for David. David takes up Goliath's sword, and this is the last we hear about Goliath's sword. But he takes up Goliath's sword, and I think he takes this thing up, and it becomes something that takes the place of God. And that seems silly. But we do it. We're like, God, that's my money. I know you've taken care of things and you provided in a powerful way. I've seen you do it when I need you in that moment and that check comes out of nowhere and I didn't expect it. You've taken care of it. God, that's my family. They're sick and you heal them. They're in danger and you take care of them. God, that's mine. God, that's my house. That's my job. That's my. You can fill in the blank with whatever you want. This is not the first time that we see God's people take something that God has done something miraculous and powerful through and turn it into an idol in their own life. The last example I want to share with you is God's people. This is in 2 Kings. I can't remember the chapter right now that we hear this finale to this story. But God's people, they fled Egypt and they're complaining. We would have been better in Egypt. God, you provided for us. You took care of us, but I'm sick of this bread. I'm sick of this food. What in the world, God? I just don't have the security. It's not the way I looked. It's not the way I thought it would look, God. And they're complaining. And so they start getting punished and these snakes start biting them. You know the story I'm talking about? The snakes start biting them and they start dying. And they come to Moses and they're like, please, God, speak to God. And please, we're sorry. And so Moses takes this on God's instruction, by the way. He takes this bronze and he makes a statue and he puts it on a pole and it's a snake and he lifts this bronze snake up into the air and he tells his people, anybody who looks at this bronze snake, you won't die from your snake bites. You'll be healed. You'll be fine. It's like God is telling his people, look where I tell you to look. Focus on me, and I'll take care of the rest. And then in 2 Kings, we see We see that God's people have actually started worshiping the snake. That actual bronze statue, they've been worshiping it. Because this new king comes in 2 Kings, and he goes, I'm going to tear down all the Asherah poles and the altars to Baal, and I'm tearing down all this stuff. And one of the things that's specifically mentioned is the snake, the bronze snake, the idol, the statue that Moses made. It's specifically mentioned. We're just going to take a minute or so here because I know God's speaking to you. He's speaking to me. What are the things in your life that God has provided through and from and with that have all of a sudden become these idols? They become, instead of, here's the important part, think about it this way, instead of that sword being a reminder of how powerful God is and pointing back to the one who saved and the one who provided, the sword becomes the one that saves and provides. That snake became the thing that saved and provided rather than the God who moved through it. Let's spend a few moments here just dwelling in God's presence of what he's saying to us. Go in peace, follow God, be filled with him, be filled with his presence. And this week, my prayer for you is that God's presence is so strong in you, that you are so close to Jesus, that before you even realize what's happening, you're running at the lions and the bears with a stick. Because nothing else compares to your God. Amen. You're dismissed.